The Hilltop Glove Podcast is sponsored by Mid-Carolina Service Company.
Mid-Carolina Service Company is the first name to search for your residential or commercial HVAC needs in Lexington and surrounding areas.
Just go holler at Jason and Clint. They'll hook you up on the air conditioners, on the restaurant equipment, refrigerators, refrigeration, ice machine repair. They've been doing this for years. I know them cats forever.
Family owned and operated since 2006, they pride themselves in their quality work and customer relationships. Call 803-356-4153 or visit midcarolinaserviceco.com for no obligation quote for service today. This episode of Hilltop Glove Podcast is brought to you by the Simon Marketing Agency. Turn an ordinary business into an extraordinary one since 2020. Simon James and his team do the hard work of attracting new customers so you can focus on making your business exceptional. As a brand marketing expert, Simon specializes in creating a unique and unforgettable identity for your business. From generating awareness to captivating content creation and strategic advertising, Simon Marketing Agency has you covered. Elevate your business today. Give them a call at 843-942-8880 or email them at simon@smasimon.com. Visit them at www.simonmarketing.agency. Make sure to follow them on Instagram at BrandSimonTV.
This episode of the Hilltop Glove Podcast is sponsored by Bob's. Bob's is a Columbia-based retailer of over 100 Black-owned products from 20 Black-owned businesses. Bob's offers a wide range of items from household cleaning, cosmetics, and everything in between. With every visit to Bob's, you support the Black-owned businesses, giving them the opportunity to grow and establish connections with our community. Bob's is located inside the Noma Warehouse at 2222 Sumter Street in Columbia, South Carolina. Visit their website, WeShopBops.com, for in-store pickup or to find out more. Bops can also be found via social media on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at WeShopBops. When you stop by, tell them the Hilltop Glove sent you. Bops brings quality Black brands to the Columbia community. The Hilltop Glove Podcast is sponsored by True Brilliance Entertainment.
True Brilliance is a production, promotions, and management company dedicated to connecting artists and producers across the Carolinas to music industry professionals.
Several of their clients have placements both domestic and internationally as a result of their services.
Are you an artist or producer looking to build meaningful relationships within the music industry? Then True Brilliance is for you. Check them out at paramilitary.com. That's spelled P-A-I-R-A military.com.
Welcome to the Hilltop Glove Podcast.
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 Hello and welcome to the Hilltop Glove Podcast. Today we are thrilled to have the talented Kanate Hendricks with us today. Kanate is a creative powerhouse known for his work in filmmaking and podcasting. He is a writer, director, and producer of several short films, each of which has captivated audiences with its unique storytelling and compelling characters. One of his most recent works, Blood of the Land, is set in 1873 and follows the struggles of freed people in Jubilee Parish as they are being displaced by white men. Kanate is also the co-host of the Black Summit podcast, where he and his partner Brooks tackle current events and discuss the hardships faced by the Black community. Through their podcast, they shed light on important issues and offer a platform for meaningful conversations. We are honored to have Kanate join us today, and we cannot wait to hear some more about his creative journey and inspiration behind his outstanding work. So sit back, relax, and let's jump right into this conversation. Thank you for joining us today. How are you doing, brother man?
Man, I am blessed, and thank you for having me. I'm humbled, and thank you for that intro. I'd like to meet that guy. You make me
think. Hey, Tamaya, go ahead. Thank
you, Tamaya. I appreciate it.
I watched the film, so I liked it, Blood of the Land. I was like, okay, this is in Charleston. I like it.
Thank you so much. He's doing his thing. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
No problem. Mm-hmm.
So we always like to start off by giving our audience, because our podcast, For Millennials Learning How to Adult, we like to treat this almost as a digital Rolodex. So they need to know a little bit about who they're about to call before they make the call, right? Mm-hmm. So could you just tell our audience a little bit more about yourself, what your childhood was like?
Okay, yeah. My childhood was, you know, pretty interesting. Growing up, you know, two sisters and only male. Falls on my mother's side. Ah. My father, you know, had other sons. But, you know, born in Baltimore, Maryland, moved to Charleston when I was real little. So I raised Charleston. So I'm Geechee.
Hey.
As they say, you know, you
let me hear the Geechee talk.
You want to hear the Geechee?
I got to bring it out.
You know, they say you
I want to hear you talk Geechee because I come to talk too. And people don't understand what I'm saying.
What they saying? Hey, you know that saying. They say either you a Kamya or you a Benya.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I consider myself a Benya. Only thing that says Baltimore is my birth certificate. Other than that, Charleston born and bred, you know. So I grew up eating fish and grits and all that good stuff. So you know, growing up, humble beginnings, was in the military, military after high school.
What then branch?
Army.
Okay.
Was in the Army. Yeah, went in the Army. And then later on, went to school for business. And I was going back to school again. Actually, I was going to go into pharmaceutical. My mother's a nurse. She wanted all of us to go into the medical field because, you know, medical is recession-proof.
There
whatever
you
happens, you always going to need it, right?
Yep.
But whatever happened, I guess, you know, it didn't work in the cards because I was an engineer in the military. And just so I ended up going to school for business. So when I went back again for another degree, it just so happens with the medical field, they only allowed 24 in the pharmaceutical program, 24 a year. So the government is paying for me to go to school once again.
Yep.
So therefore, there was like, well, either you wait in order to get your stipend or you can change your major. And my next thing I like, because I'm very creative, was film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I came back into film, you know, and got heavy and dive into the film industry. And you know, I look at it as a business as well, because, you know, there's show business, you know.
It is a business.
So I look at it like that. So that's how I became in film. And in 2009, did some stuff with Army Wives. And there was another show was being filmed here. It was Reckless and The Inspectors.
Right.
So
I did a few things down here, man. This is a good spot for it.
Yeah, a few things like that. And I did a couple of commercials with Dominion Energy and MUSC. Did some special effects on that. And then also I worked when Top Chef came.
Yeah.
So I worked on Top Chef for when he was here for almost the entire season of that, and then some other independent projects and things like that. DP to Porgy and Bess. Are you familiar with you know Lauren Douglas Warren?
No.
She's out of Columbia, worked with ETV. Andy Gritz.
Shut up. Wait, I got you.
With Sherrod.
When he said, I understood who he was talking about.
So I DP'd her project for a while, and then getting into my own bag and doing some short films and things like that with some of my alums who we all graduated from film school together.
Okay.
So, and that's my crew who I normally work with, because we all, you know, like they say, it's a film family.
You're right.
So, and these are people we would, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. So I'm comfortable with them. They come with me. So, you know, we all work with our same crew. And then I develop Ivy League Films, which is my film production. Which, as you said earlier, a couple of short films I did, and we got a few accolades for some of the films that we did. So, yeah, and, you know, and here I am today.
Hey, man. Yeah. Well, of course, what you're talking about, your creative journey, what influenced you growing up when it comes to your creative work?
Well, you know, I know this may sound cliche, but, you know, they always says art imitates life, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I like to tell stories. Well, first, when I was young, I used to draw, which I still can, you know. And granted, you know, your parents, they're going to encourage you, even though it looks like crap. But as I got older, I got better and better, and I was always real, real good at art, you know.
Yeah.
And for me, like you know, art imitates life. To me, when I'm doing a film, it's just like I'm painting a picture with people, you know, because if I can't see it in my head, then I can't do it. So I have to be able to see it. So when I block out actors, it's just like I'm literally creating living art.
Yes.
That's how I,
yes.
That's my motivation. So, you know, that's how I am. That's how I think, you know what I mean? So like if I'm on a set, like if I'm working with you guys and I'm doing, I may just literally zone out for a minute.
Right.
And but all I'm seeing the moving things around. Thing. Yeah. Then I said, okay, let me get you here. I need you here, and I want you guys to do this, and then we can tweak it and fine tune it if need be. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's pretty much my process.
Yeah. That kind of goes right into our next question, though. Like, you know, as a producer, you're responsible for like behind the scenes aspects of production compared to like the director. Right. When you get to do the creative element, so like, which role do you like more than the other, producing or directing?
Good question.
Oh, that is a very good question. To be honest with you, I really like directing more, and I'll tell you why. When I first came into film, I was in front of the camera. I took acting classes. I did South of Broadway, and then when I my degree, there's a class called the Camera and Actor, and I took that as well. But when I came into school to learn more about film, because I wanted, like I said, I have stories and I wanted to create. And so I wanted to learn about the, you know, how things work behind the camera. Now, granted, I saw Army Wives, but I didn't get a lot of the technical aspect of it. Because, you know, we setting up scenes, we move on quick. Right, so you don't see what everyone does, right?
Big productions, there's a lot of moving parts.
Huge production, you know what I mean? So when I went to film school, I wanted to create my own. And I figured the reason with directing, the main reason why I went that route is because not only myself, I can help others. Mm. You know, if I create something and people want to act, and if they're not getting all the roles, at least they can have a reel. They can, you know, they don't have to stay in one particular genre of film. Mm-hmm. You know, they can they can exercise their range or what have you. And so that way I can help others as well. That's why I prefer the directing more. You know,
You're making the calls.
Right, exactly, So that's why I prefer the directing over the producing. You know what I mean? But not saying I don't like producing either, but, you know.
And it's not shut down to producing either. Producing is amazing. You got to have producers.
Yes, you understand
that.
You got to have producers. Part. You have to have producers.
So as a producer, like, what are some hardships that you face, like, producing your own films? Like,
oh, man.
Scheduling, or is it finding locations, booking cast members?
Ooh, man, that is another good question.
If nobody's ever worked on a film, it is ridiculous how many people it takes. Even if it's just a handful of people doing it, then everybody's got to do like 50 jobs.
50 jobs, man. It's like, you know, and actually I'll answer it in two parts if
not
I
a problem. Yeah, yeah.
The first, okay, just to give you a brief. Have you ever, y'all heard of Master Classes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm watching them now.
So I've watched the one, Scorsese, one of my favorite directors. Of course, you got the Spike Lee's, the Antoine Fuqua's, and James Cameron's. So I remember watching Spike Lee's when he did She's Gotta Have It.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was outside of Hollywood. And he pretty much was saying that it's impossible, it's almost impossible, but it is possible to make a film outside of Hollywood.
Right.
When you're independent, you're the producer, you're the director, you know, sometimes you're the writer, you're the craft service, you're the PA. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you might even have to do like me, because I cut hair too. Sometimes I got to be the barber. I got to be on set.
But you cut hair too?
I cut hair too. So with that aspect, what you said about far as how hard is it with producing, for example, when I did Blood of the Land, we started that project in 2016 from its infancy, and we didn't finish till 2020 because I was trying to get funding, and we had all type of campaigns and things like that. So, and I did a short film previous, right? Mm-hmm. And I produced that, which I had a couple of EPs who just put up money, but for the most part, with EPs, executive producer, but for the most part, I did most of the producing and everything myself. So with Blood of Land being a time period piece, I know it's going to be even harder to do, right? Yeah. So what I did was, my crew, if I may, I shout the names out. Aaron Hamilton is my DP. Yeah. And Tanjanika Green, who's normally she'd normally be my AD on project. So I brought them in as producers to help me along the lines of getting certain things and, you know, and facilitating certain things, stuff like that. Now, we ran into a lot of problems. We had to reschedule shoots and things like that. But it is hard in the sense of just getting people where they need to be, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There were certain parts of the film, certain components where, It's very trying to keep it as authentic as possible, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you saw the film. There's a part with the blacksmith. So all the and it's, this movie's set in 1800. Everything he made and everything he brought is from 1800s. But he would come all the way from Charlotte. Because see, that's how committed he was to do the film. Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just to use locations, right? Going out in the latter part of the film production, I finally got a locations manager to help me out. So going out, talking to people, and people letting us use their properties for free, right? And some people end up reshooting, and some people cancel. So we shot all over in rural South Carolina. Wow. And then the thing is, when you're doing these things, so because sometimes actors can't make it or locations, something have a location. So I find myself being like a politician. I had to apologize so much to people and reschedule for certain things, man. But, you know, to be honest with you, it is hard. But the hardest thing is, I would say, doing both, directing and producing what I was doing. Even though I had producers, but still everything still pointed to me.
Everything.
Right. Everything still, you know, each department, hair, makeup, wardrobe, and all of the wardrobe, I bought up my own pocket. You know, everything you've seen, I paid for all out of my own pocket, you know?
Well, so did you have to, all right, stop there. Wait one second. Good Lord Jesus.
Get you some funding.
Yeah, man, wait. Yeah. So, because I know how expensive wardrobing can be. And this is a period.
Man, just fabric. I've started sewing lately. And this is expensive.
See what I'm saying? And this is a period piece. Mm-hmm. So who was making this stuff?
Well, luckily, I had another female I met on when I did Top Chef. Mm-hmm. She wanted to be a costume and work in wardrobe, even though she works in finance. It's still on some productions to this day. Mm-hmm. Crystal Neesmith, I'll shout her out too.
Shout out.
So, but I got her. It's like the men's stuff, I can do, you know. And what I did was I went to thrift stores, Salvation Army, and you know, and Goodwill, and I was able to find some old things, but the women's stuff, I needed help, so I had her come on board and sent her a lot of images of what I was looking for, and then lucky there was this consignment place that dealt with old costumes right off of Rivers Avenue, and we found that spot, and I was able to find the main characters, the mother, the daughter. Find their costumes and their outfits. And then even, you know, back then, the women would always wear headscarves.
Yeah.
So Crystal, when she was helping me get the women wardrobe straight, and she even went a step further, well, we got to go to Walmart. I'm like, why we got to Walmart? Because we got to get fabric. She literally found fabric to cut out, to tie the scarves, to match everything. And back then, even the smallest details, like, you know, like men, we say shirts, women say blouse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Nowadays, their shirts have collars, but back then they didn't.
They didn't.
So she even went as far as cutting out all the collars on that, which I didn't even think of, cutting all the collars out on the women's tops and everything to make it look real authentic. Yeah, so.
People that's love why I had craft. To ask about the wardrobe.
The wardrobe.
Period piece. Period pieces. Has to be on point.
But we did raise some funding. Mm-hmm. We did raise. We did have a campaign. We had Kickstarter. We got a little bit of money. We used Indiegogo. We got a little bit of money. So then we went back and did when people donate money to help.
GoFundMe.
GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. We did GoFundMe, right? So what I did was I said, we got to change the marketing strategy. So I realized that it's easier to get $5 from 100 people than to get $100 from one person, right?
Yeah.
So remember when the hurricane hit in Haiti?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Remember when it was Red Cross? They say and Bush and Clinton was saying, hey, just we don't want all, just give $4, just give
$3. Yeah, text to donate.
Yeah, text to donate. You know, if we get, we're happy if we get 100 people to give $4 versus one person giving $100. You know what I mean? Because that's $400 versus one.
$1, yeah.
So I said, you know what? Let's just ask everybody for $5. Just give $5. Mm-hmm. And then people started giving $200, you know. So I'll tell any filmmaker if you want to get funding some type, if you want to use, you know, GoFundMe, ask for the minimum.
Small.
Yeah, and they will give more. They will give more.
Allow that.
So we raised a little over three grand, you know, and then some people gave some money. And some people were just so engulfed in the project that they wanted to see it come to fruition, you know, and they were so dedicated to it. So And, you know, we were very blessed in that aspect, man. And, you know, I told everybody I couldn't have done it without them.
Man, I like how forthcoming you are in giving out that respect. And
Yeah,
because I'll tell you, for a lot of folks that are listening to our podcast and that want to do these things or have had short forays into doing it, mm-hmm. This part about raising funds is a big thing for any creative endeavor.
It's what everybody ends up talking about.
Yeah. It's a big thing.
Yeah. How do we get money to do the things?
Boom.
Yeah.
Right?
Boom.
Because it's not like a business venture where I can mm-hmm. be like, well, you know, here's right. a model that shows that there's a market for this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you don't know if there's going to be a market for creative things.
You do not.
Or if you're going to see a return.
Right.
Right. Especially short films.
Come on.
You don't see returns
on
short films.
No, I definitely want to do short films. That's why I made sure I was particular with these questions.
She asked you questions.
So just tell me how to do it.
Yeah. I need the blueprint. Yep. My first time meeting him. I need to ask mm-hmm. the right questions.
Yeah. And you're asking the right questions, too. Definitely.
How do you market mm-hmm. your films once they're finished? Or do you submit them to film festivals? Or how do you go about that?
Okay. So, before Blood of the Land, I did a film called Dirty Undercover, right?
Okay.
So that one is a cop drama. It's about a prostitute that dies and they're trying to solve it. So, you know, that type of thing. So there used to be Otterbox. It was a platform that you submitted your films.
I remember.
But now it's Film Freeway, right? Because Otterbox is gone. It's Film Freeway now. So what I did was I submitted it to, and this all out of pocket, because you know you got to pay.
You pay, right?
Festivals are free. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so I submitted it to about maybe 12 festivals or so, and we got in a couple, in which we won some awards and a few, you know. Mm. So we got in some. So that's normally the route I do with that particular film. That's what I did. And then I did a private, I Trident, because that's my alum, a Trident Film Department. So then after that, what I did was they let me use the auditorium and things like that. So then what I did is I just, instead of making it be all about me, I got a few other people who had a few short films, and I just did a showcase. So I had it set up. We had some, some crafties. You know, set aside for people to come in. And I just let everyone showcase their project and their film. And then mine was the feature at the end. So, and that's then, you know, we good. Let them set up. Because, you know, I'm all about community and trying to help everyone as a whole.
But if you're going to bring that many people together, you might as well give them a little bit of what's going on.
Exactly, yeah. So that's what I did with that film. And then later on, then I had it was on Amazon Prime for a while. So everyone could see it on Prime. And then I just recently, maybe about last year, so I took it off. With Blood of the Land, I did the same thing. I did, of course, the pandemic hit as soon as we finished, right?
Right
with
on
that,
the
right? Yeah, the pandemic. As soon as we got done, the pandemic hit in 2020, finished editing in the studio, doing voiceover with actors, everything. Pandemic shut it down, so we had a sort of a bit of a pushback on that. But then later on, in 2021, we did get a chance to submit it to some festivals. The Charlotte Black Film Festival, we became semifinalists. The Afro South Film Festival that Lauren Douglas them started last year was their
first one.
We got the Viewer's Choice Award in that one.
Oh wow!
And then in Atlanta as well. I believe it's called the Starlight Film Festival. I believe so. We won award in that one, and then I did private showings with that film. But this one I haven't put it on any other platforms. Mm-hmm. I haven't, you know, I just haven't decided. Put it on any other platform. Sometimes if people want to see it, I'll send them the link and they'll watch it. But I just haven't decided to do anything with it. Because I'm kind of...
Okay, yeah, what's the reason for it? Why are you...
Because I don't have ADD. It is kind of, once I do a project and I'm on it for so long, mm-hmm. I don't really want to see it no more.
Oh, yes.
I just want to go into something else.
It's like being a cook. You're cooking food all day in the kitchen. When you, I don't want nothing to eat.
Yeah,
I've been around food all day.
Exactly, you've been around all day, right?
You got to find somebody to hand it off to then.
Yeah,
take it, run.
So some people want to see it, and I'll be like, oh, I just shoot them a link. And I'm like, I'm good. So, you know, I just want to kind of, you know, segue into something else. I kind of seen it, so I just don't really, you know, fool up with it too much.
That's wild,
you know,
man. I had to ask this just because you were talking about the different platforms, and I know this day and age, this is one platform that everybody likes to go to put their films on, mm-hmm. as you might already know, called Tubi. Okay. Yes. So what is your judgment or understanding of tubing, and how could that be a tool that people who are making films could utilize?
Oh my God, y'all! You guys are awesome. You guys are asking hitting all the good questions. You know,
we only got 45 minutes.
Dude, it's so funny you said that. Honestly, before I never watched Tubi.
Seriously,
I never used to watch Tubi because on social media it had such a bad stigma of terrible content. And I was like, oh my! I just look at it and I laugh, and I even seen some known actors, and I'm like, why did they do this?
Why did they do a Tubi film? Yeah.
And then people started asking me, hey man, will you put something on Tubi? And I was like, first I was like, nah. I was like, nah. And then they asked me, will I put Blood of the Land or Dirty Undercover? And then I went and looked at the format for Tubi. Tubi wanted to be 40 minutes or, and these are short, 25 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
They want, and I know why, because their format, because they run commercials.
There you go.
That's how they make the money. Mm-hmm. So, and I will say this, and then I talked to more people, network people, and I'm like, man, you know, but what about Tubi? And, you know, and they might laugh, and then they always come back and say, now you can hear some Charleston. They'll come back and be like, hey, but you know what, though? Hey, low-key. Hey, Tubi the joint, boy.
Real talk.
I had a partner of mine say, yo, man, hey, real talk, but hey, we be on that little Tubi now.
That's where Geechee One. That's where they put their stuff at.
Yeah, they do.
Free, and if you like me, you looking at trying to cut every streaming service you can right now, because they all jacking the price up and cutting what they producing anyway.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So Tubi out there.
I don't want to... Because I know you have a question about what's up for the future. But I don't want to overstep. Maybe I'll wait until you get there.
I just had to ask you that question about Tubi because it led right into the stream. So we had to ask about that because it's something that everybody always tells me it's funny that you say this. And of course, our audience will know this. Nah, they be saying, man, some of the movies be trash, bro. They be trash.
So was half of what was in Blockbuster.
This is my
Y'all
point.
Y'all remember? Like, it was,
every movie that came.
Oh, my goodness.
Transmorphers and, you know, like, all of that shit. Yeah.
But we watched it.
We watched them, We took chances on them. Mm-hmm. We didn't even get previews on it.
Friday night and movie machines and whatever. Yeah, man, network television at 2 in the morning. We watched garbage.
That's true.
It's fun.
I'm not angry at it. I'm telling you. I tell people all the time, like, I'm like, well, it's access and it's a platform that can be used.
Facts.
Right.
It's just a tool.
So if they're paying artists, then that's the thing.
That's the thing that matters. Are you paying artists? If you're paying, I'm good with it. And like Jay-Z would say back in the day, well, if you don't like my song, just change the station.
Right.
So that's what you can do. Right. That's what's so dope about Tubi.
And then if you utilize Tubi, you don't have to put out the same content.
You can put out gold.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Facts.
So I have one more quick question before we move on. Can you talk about the realistic timeline with editing? So you said Blood of the Lamb took about 4 years to, you know, produce it. What about the editing process? Or do you do that, or do you have someone else to do that?
Man, the beautiful thing about Trident Tech, we learn everything from top to bottom.
Nice.
So almost everyone I work with, we can do almost everything ourselves.
So you would say there definitely is a value in doing like a proper kind of film school background kind of thing.
Yes, but you don't have to.
Right.
You
can always self-talk. Yeah, but
you can. Yeah. And if you're going to do that, I would say definitely utilize a lot of YouTube.
Because
at least you got people on. I tell people, if you don't have the money to go to school, definitely utilize a lot of YouTube. Because you can sit in a lecture all day long until you physically touch things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like I was telling, that's your brother, right?
Yeah.
I was telling him earlier, you know, the beautiful thing about Trident, and it doesn't get the critically acclaimed because it's a 2-year technical college. Mm-hmm. But technically, it's one of the best film schools on the Southeast Coast.
I know you're
right. Because you got SCAD, right?
Yep, right
but,
there.
But we Trident has over $5 million worth of equipment.
Yep.
Mm. And day one, when we get there, you get a lab and you automatically touching equipment.
Mm.
Versus when you went to, what is that? The Art Institute, they go on theory. You don't touch equipment until your senior year.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was doing Porgy and Bess, and I needed lighting because I was the DP, and then I had to teach, while I'm filming their stuff, I had to teach some people sound because the sound guy left. Yeah, I had to literally show them, okay. Matter of fact, Crystal, the one who did wardrobe, I had to show her.
Yeah.
So I had to plug her in to do sound. The good thing, we learn everything, right?
Right.
Wow. So they had to get some lighting equipment from me from the Art Institute. Well, they didn't even have proper, it wasn't film light. It was photography light. So you can't distinguish between, is this soft light, like somewhat what you have here.
Yeah.
So there's no tungsten and there's no daylight. So you want to put a certain hue on certain skin. You know, I won't light him the way I light you.
Exactly.
I won't light him, you know, different texture, colors of skin. So I had to bounce light and things like that, you know. And it was from the Art Institute, so they didn't have the proper film light.
Because they weren't doing what? Touching things.
They weren't touching it, right?
Yeah, it was all theory.
Yeah, and they go more on culinary and fashion photography.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally different. That's what they base on. But as you said, far as editing... Like, okay, I'll say this. I do some side work for nonprofits, right? I film a lot of things for them. So, like, I film some rural farms. That's one project. I shoot their conferences. I do interviews, which don't take long. So it's like, if I'm shooting something and say it's going to be 5 minutes long, and we might be out there 6 hours. So you figure it's probably going to take about maybe 12, 14 hours just to edit that. I got to do that in pieces because you're going to see, I might shoot 6 hour worth of footage, but I got to cut it down to
all
this.
Right.
So you know with the editing process, first things first, you got to get your clips, you got to sync up sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll sync up sound, I'll do color grading, I got to put graphics in there, their logos, I got to put titles for who's this and that. Then I'm gonna have to put some royalty free music, you know, video transitions, all that stuff. So the editing process, it's actually longer than the filming process.
Oh yes,
it's way longer.
Mm-hmm. That's where the grind really comes in.
Yeah.
You use your knowledge up front to get a product that you can then grind to.
Exactly.
So you're making your own, and this is why I always like to explain this with when it comes to film and audio. Is you're just creating a raw resource.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, this is like you excavating a diamond.
Yeah.
But it's not done yet. You got to clean the dirt off of it.
Still got to make it rain.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, like raw gold. You know? You got to, you know, refine it.
Melt it down, get it out of the ore.
Exactly.
People are like, what? Exactly. Yeah, your gold's sitting in. You got to take it out of the ore. Yeah, refine it, get it down to clean.
Exactly. And that's how one time when dealing with film, you know, it's just like music industry. You know, we've run across our share of scammers, of people who going to say, well, you know, I only want it to be, you know, no more than about 4 minutes. But they want to pay you this. And they don't realize, okay, everything that comes what they want because I got a crew. Now, some things I can do myself.
Yeah.
But depends on what the magnitude of what they want. I have a crew.
Yeah.
You know, outside of us, any outside work, we get paid.
Yeah.
But if we're doing our own because we come up together and we know we're grinding, they won't charge me. I won't charge them. But outside of that, and not saying we got to get paid a lot, but we have to be compensated some kind of way.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just other things getting front. You got to get compensated
work. You got to get compensated for it. And then with all the professional equipment that we're bringing in and things like that. So, I did one of my first gigs. I did some work for MUSC. Mm-hmm. I was filming there. They had a project about it's like an exercise showing people to put through dance.
Oh,
so I went to various locations, and the lady thought that she was like, okay, I shot one and they liked it. And she literally said, look here, I need you to shoot 9 more locations. I got about $200. And I looked at her. Luckily, my friend who brought me in, she was like, oh, no. He's not a little kid. He's a grown man. Because I looked around. She thought I was she said, no, he done been in the military, everything. And she came to me, she had to apologize. She said, oh, I'm so sorry.
She said,
student, I thought, because at that time I was more clean.
She's like, you're the high school kid doing some yearbook work.
She tried to hustle me.
For the low.
Yeah, so they had to come back.
And, I guess we've all done those kind of jobs at some point.
Yeah,
at
some point.
Would you say not locations a lot, though.
Do you have interns or anything that help you with any of this process?
At that time, no. Because some jobs I can literally... Now, granted, I could use help. Like sometimes if a student want to come, I'll let them, you know, see what I do. I'll build the camera or whatever type of setup I'm going to do if I need lighting or something like that.
Yeah.
But a lot of things I can do myself, but sometimes I could bring somebody in to help them at all, you know, or let them run the audio for me or something like that. I let them mic up, you know, mic up, the people, whoever I'm interviewing. Mm-hmm. You know, in three-point lighting, it's basic lighting. You
it's
know,
nothing.
Key light, fill light, and the backlight, if need be, something like that. But for the most part, I can do something myself. But I've had people come with me. Like, I hired a creative writer, because one gig, they want a creative writer. Now, granted, I write too. I could do it all myself because I write scripts. I could do it all myself. Yeah.
But sometimes it's easier not to change gears every five minutes.
So I just said, you know what? I'll hire somebody. I brought her in, and you know, and then I use her to carry some of my bags. You know, hey, give me that lens. Let me get this.
There you
lens,
go.
You know what I mean? You know, I don't know. She don't know the difference between a prime and a zoom and a tele. So I just say, yeah, that lens right there. Give me that one. Yeah, the little one. Give me that. You know. Yeah. So just, you know, a few things. But for the most part, I'm usually a one-man show.
Yeah.
Because if it's a smaller project, you know, I can knock it out, no problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
You ready? That's that Charleston right there. That's that Charleston. No, real quick. That's that Charleston right there. Yeah, I got that one. Right. I can do it all. No, I heard that so many times. I was like, you know what? Yeah, I probably can do it myself. Go ahead, Tawana.
Yeah. But tell us about your podcast show, because we know you behind the camera. What is it like being in front of the camera?
Yeah.
How did you start your own podcast?
Okay, how the podcast got started. Well, Brooks, my co-host, he graduated from film school with me. I might have graduated maybe slightly before him or whatever, but remember I said I do a lot of things. So I'm a barber also.
Yeah.
So I cut his hair. And when I'm cutting his hair, you haven't heard of shop talk.
Yep.
So he's a little younger. So we may talk about anything between relationships to politics to religion.
Yep.
Or just anything, general topics. And we would talk, and I'd give my perspective from, because I'm older than him, from my perspective and my walks of life. And because he's from California. He, you know, his family from the South, but he raised up in California. He didn't raise up in the conservative South.
Yeah.
So, you know, difference of opinion, you know, sometimes agree to disagree, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he kept saying, hey, man, we should do a podcast. And I was like, oh, I'm cutting hair, I'm fading them all. You know, one after the other. And then, you know, and he'd 2 weeks later, he'd come back and cut, and we'd talk, and he would say it again. Same thing, I'm fading them up. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And he said it a third time. This time I'm paying attention. I'm like, okay, we can do it. He said it a fourth time. I said, all right, cool. And then, you know, time went on. Maybe about a month later, he finally said, man, let's do it. And we shoot it right in the Foley Room at Trident, where we get access to a lot of things. Yeah. In the studio, we shoot it right in there. So, and that's how it was birthed. We just went in there and just, first it was just straight audio.
Yeah.
Then we started doing two camera set up and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's still in its infancy.
Yeah.
So we only been doing it for a couple of months. Not too long.
When did you all start? What month did you start?
Oh man, we started.
Because we're in October right now.
You're on October. We might have started maybe in before May, maybe like, I want to say maybe February.
Oh, something wow. like that. Okay.
Yeah, we haven't been doing it. We don't really have a whole lot of episodes. I think we may just got up to maybe either 400 or 500 subscribers or
That's
something like
bad.
That.
That's good.
Great.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, it's cool. It is different.
From
it
film.
Is different. I mean, I like it, but me, I realize that I'm a person that, and one reason why I love directing, I'm behind the camera.
I got you.
That's what's
different. I don't
need the fame.
Yep.
I take the wealth, but I don't need the fame.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, and I like it as if I wrote it, I direct, I produce, and if I say you two act, they looking for you guys. They ain't looking at me. Mm-hmm. So you guys can get all that glory. I can just sit back.
You sit back and tell the story.
Yeah, even though I made more money than you guys.
Yeah, you still made money. Exactly.
But I can sit back, you know? So with the podcast, and I started thinking, you know, they had me thinking because we had a young lady on. He was talking about if we blew up. And I said, man, I don't know, man. If this blew up, I don't know how long I'll do this.
Because you aren't used to being.
Yeah. I mean, I start off acting.
Yeah.
But then now, since I'm behind the camera, I said, man, I don't know. I mean, I want it to be successful, but I don't know if I want it to be the point where I'm just like going around, hey, man, we know, you know what I'm saying? I don't know how I'm going to feel about that, you know?
Because we're in the hiding.
Seriously. I'm just like, man.
I think this is something like we grew up with this generation of like, oh, when I make it, when I'm successful or whatever. Like, that was just what we were taught on.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. We've been doing a podcast for a while. I don't see, like, what does blowing up look like?
That's a good question.
Like, to me, it was when we call people and they're like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll come on the podcast.
Right. That's what caught us off guard. That's caught me off guard.
I think it's when people see you out in the street and they're scared to approach you. Like, I'm on the same level as you. I'm don't put me on a pedestal, please.
Yes. Oh, please don't do that.
Yeah, treat me like a regular person.
I imagine, like, what we're doing is basically, like local radio level 20 years ago.
Right.
That's all I look
at. Not even drive time, like middle of the day or middle of the evening.
Between 10 and 2. And
some is cool. Yeah.
Some people, I mean, they actually have journalism background. Some people actually look at themselves as journalism work. And I guess it can be.
That's what I do. I
don't have journalists. I don't look at myself as like, you know, a journalist. I'm like him, like local radio type stuff on our small scale. That's how I look at it, you know.
Yeah. Now, how did you guys come up with the name?
Man, we had a few names and they didn't work. So we were trying to find something that refers to a form for talking, you know, in Akron people. And then we went through different names, different synonyms and stuff like that. And then Summit came up. And then I said, hey, we black, you know, so.
Easy.
You know. But yeah, but actually, it was the Black Summit, but that's. So we changed it to Black Summit because it's TBS, Turner Broadcast South. So that's why we had to go with Black Summit, just Black Summit.
That's
you know
smart.
What I mean?
Smart.
Yeah, and it's just black because we black. Yep. That's on it. And we have
everybody on
there. Anybody can come on there, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we talk about different topics and social, you know, current events and social issues and things like that. So.
Beautiful. And of course, you talk about things that are happening locally here in the community. Right?
Yes, yes, yes. Right. Like we trying to do a, you know, mental health is a big thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we recently, a woman who works in the medical field, she said she wanted to come on and we want to talk about some things like that. And then another friend of mine who's in the entertainment industry, he wants to come on, and another buddy of mine, he was helping people expunge their records.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then he wants to come on eventually. So hopefully in the future we'll try to get those things. Because I feel like it's good to entertain, but I also want to inform as well. Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always, you know, I believe there's truth in the comedy.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
There is.
So we can entertain you, but at the same time give you something that can inform you that you can take with you. And hopefully it'll help better your life to better someone else's life too, so.
Man, that's right on point. I like hearing that type of stuff because that's the type of content that I like to take in. I love I love things that make you laugh.
Yeah.
But they teach you at the same time.
Exactly.
That's why I love great comedians like George Carlin and Richard Pryor. Like they're telling you something, but you're laughing. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's the best way to give out information. Mm-hmm. I know we're getting to that point in the podcast where we are going to wrap up, but I have to do this because, of course, we're going to let you do your shameless plugs and all that good stuff. I got to ask you this other question quickly on podcasting. How do you all, like, do you all look to get guests by communicating, reaching out to people, or do your guests just come to you?
Actually, a little bit of both, actually. Okay. When they find out, because I guess maybe I don't do a good enough job of... You know, but if they find out, then they ask, hey, can we come on? And then a few of them we did ask to come on, the first initial ones. Uh-huh. And then usually after we ask them to come on, then sometimes you will see them reoccur. Because now by this time they've asked us, hey, man, I want to touch on some of something that they know we interested in. Yeah, can I come back on? You know, so a few people ask. And some of them get inspired to trying to start their own podcast as well. So,
so it's a little things to say, man.
They want to be heard.
Yeah. And we're getting tired of social media as that forum because it's turned to trash. So people looking for a little bit more professional, a little more respectable. Calm and less crazy.
Yeah.
That's true. And I think, like I was telling him, I think that it's one of the – I'm not saying it's easy in a sense of – there's always something going on in social media, rather be entertaining or something serious, like, you know, like we did one on the war with in Israel, you know what I'm saying, with the Hamas and stuff. So there's always things going on, so there's always something to talk about.
There is.
You know, there's always something. Even if you're off social media and you put on TV, CNN, MSNBC, even Fox, there's always something
I try to miss it this week.
If there's not, they'll make it up.
Yeah, exactly.
I try to miss it this week. I couldn't miss it. I mean, I work at an orthopedic office, and so I try to avoid all the news all week because I knew some crazy stuff was about to happen. Some F-boy stuff was about to pop off. So I try not to pay attention to it. By the time I got to Thursday, I hate to say it, y'all, because you know basketball started back. So I'm up here trying to watch LeBron and them play basketball, right? That's all I want to do. I know it's all
just a little distraction.
Just a little distraction,
it's a little
right?
Pointless stuff that doesn't actually matter but looks really cool.
That's it. That's all I wanted. Boom. This man was shooting people, blah, blah, blah. They're doing this for. I said, what is this?
Let's exactly. go. And then if you're looking at basketball, now what are you talking about? Dwight Howard.
Yeah, you know I could not escape it. So, I could not escape it.
And see, and these things, I just don't know. We just have to cover them. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We have to cover them.
Yeah.
Try to give, you know, your own perspective. You know, not try to, because everybody got an opinion. It is, you know, so, you know, trying to be respectful, but you're not going to please everyone. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. If you think that this is for the fan of heart, then this ain't for you. Film or that is not for you. You can't
say that again.
You can't please everyone. You know, you know.
Not for the faint of heart.
It's not for the faint of heart.
We ain't making like mid-90s sitcoms anymore. It's not something people want to watch.
Exactly. So you know, there's always something going on, man. Yeah. Always.
Man. All right. So just to wrap up.
Yeah.
Of course, we always like to say, man, as a creative person, because you are a creative man. How do you stay consistent in creating your short films?
Okay.
And what current projects are you working on?
Ah, good question.
This is the work-life balance question that I always like to ask about.
Nice. How do I stay creative with the short films? Well, actually, right now, right now, I'm trying to get away from short film.
Okay.
I'm trying to go into more feature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, but for, and that's to segue into what I'm currently working on. I got to send a shout out to Chantel Broughton, who. I need to hit her up and tell her happy birthday. So, along with myself, I enlist four other writers.
Okay.
So, what I'm trying to, what I want to do, project, upcoming project, is a anthology. So we have seven. Now these are shorts, but they're compact.
Compile them together, then
right,
it's
exactly
a, yeah.
It's like a feature, right? So it's a short called Ripple. It pertains with Father Time will be narrating different things that have different stories, but they all are compelling. So everyone, we all graduated from film, you know, got a degree from film school, whatnot, so I enlist for other writers, including myself, and but I was trying to get Chantel because she's a grant writer.
Smart, so I'm
trying to get some funding. You know, with the whole Hollywood strike and things like that. So she was saying that you know it's hard to find funding right now
because it's kind of dried up.
It's kind of dried up, exactly. Yeah, so that's still there. But to go back, what you said about Tubi, right?
Yeah.
The Tubi tie-in. So tell us how to make money off of free streaming services.
So everyone was hitting me up about, man, you could put something on Tubi, put something on Tubi. So I have a love for comedy, right?
Yeah.
So I'm currently working on a script right now. Matter of fact, I did some work on it last night. So I'm currently working on a script called this film, a feature film called The Loser. It's about a young, I know, right? But
that's probably dope. Just stay with me.
So it's about a young man who's working. He works in a warehouse. He got his two best friends employed there, whatever. So he loses his job because his friends try to rob the place. He didn't know it. So they cause him his job. So he loses his apartment. So he tries different hustles from ride sharing and things like that. So he ends up moving back home. Right, and then he realized, like you know, a lot of things happened to me because of YouTube. So it's a comedy, right?
That's gonna be funny.
But it's gonna be funny. So basically, after some time, he kind of gets his bearing back, and then he kind of overcome that obstacle. So it'll be a message in it as well, but it's a comedy. So that will be the feature. That's the one I'm currently working
watch
on.
That.
Yeah,
I
that
mean,
that will
be. I'll be looking for it too.
Yeah, that will be on Tubi. Will be on Tubi. So hopefully, you know, we should be able to start some type of production, maybe the later part of November.
Okay,
something like that.
Oh, that's actually upcoming. Production. You're gonna start that.
Yeah.
Do you have a proposed release date? This is always funny to ask.
A proposed release? No, honestly, I
keep it open ended.
I don't have.
So with Tubi, as opposed to some of these other streaming services, where they're actually like financing you ahead of time, with Tubi, you just make it and show up with it. Or do they?
They have specific standards.
They do have specific standards.
Financing.
No. Financing. So, the same way it's okay. the Tubi platform is similar to, I don't know if y'all familiar with Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Because before Tubi, Amazon Prime had a lot of the
publishing independent films.
Yeah, right. We could put a book on Amazon book stuff now. If we wanted to record the Audible, it could be up there too.
Exactly. Like, which, you know, you still have some. Even BET Plus have some of those films too. Which now I don't know how to get on that platform. You know what I mean? I will
If BET Plus works when you use it,
right? I'd
be feeling bad because I'd be trying to like show them solidarity, but yeah, I can't use your platform.
Some things pixelating. Yeah, that's a whole segue in itself. But how their platform works is so once I do the film, in the same way with Prime, you have to be the marketing. You have to promote it, right?
Oh, I see. Right. Because they're not going to put anything into it.
No, they're not going to put nothing into it. Nope. So with Prime, you only get base paid off streaming. With Tubi, if it streams, they run. That's why I got to be long. They run the commercials. Ads. So if it's long enough and you're getting a lot of people streaming it, then there's certain ads to go there, and then you get your percentages
The more views you get, then the better ads they can run in it. So there's actually, it's not just like a straight up per view. There's kind
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I would do a whole campaign. Of course, I would do a private viewing at the auditorium.
Yeah.
Then have everyone, you know, by that time, it may be on Tubi. I'm not sure. But by that time, and then they can all, you know, Q-code it and then go straight there. And then I'll do a big social media rollout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And stuff.
Get some eyeballs. Tell your friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that works.
Trying to do a big platform. And like, you know, and if it's funny,
people are going to go and put everybody loves comedy.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and they're watching everything else on there anyway. So
even the trashy stuff. So look,
Tubi on the TV at home.
I know, right? I know I'm guilty. I've been looking for the trash show. So I can see it. So look, if you have a good product, it's going to fly.
It's going to fly.
And you can tell, they do. Tubi does a good job of letting those good products fly. But you have to drop your social, man. Just let people know how they can find you, where to get your actual content, and et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. If they want to find me and see what I'm, you know, currently what's up and coming, my Instagram, that'd be the best way, is Ivy League. It's I_V_League, which is my film production, Ivy League Films. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Black Summit Podcast. Yep. And we also talk about things that's up and coming on there as well, because my co-host, he's a filmmaker as well. So.
Perfect. So it gives you a way to
We get to plug things and let other people come on and they plug their things as well. So, you know, platform for everybody.
Excellent. Well,
we would love to come on. Just to say, we would love to come on your platform.
Yep, that's what I was about to say. Go ahead. Yep, we'd love to be a guest, man.
Oh, really? Y'all would?
Man, either in person or virtual.
I mean, it's a lot of us, you know.
Yeah, there's four.
Oh yeah!
We'll
we'll bring y'all in the studio, man. We have it set up, man. Everything, have everybody all mic'd up and everything.
We definitely gonna stay in contact.
Cross promotion and branding and things,
Yeah, we better. All right, and we gotta make sure somebody's here so she'll be able to actually.
We'll get y'all a person
because she was actually really pumped to see you today. So that's why we're happy to get her on the phone. Yeah,
because you know Tamaya. Am I saying it right?
Tamaya.
Oh, Tamaya. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Chantel had texted me and said that she said, "Yeah, we want to shadow you."
Yep.
Because Chantel was telling me that for the longest. So she got to see, I just recently shot a promo video for their app. But she was a talent. So she got to see some of what I did. I shot it at their offices. They were skased. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I shot it. She hasn't seen it yet.
She hasn't.
Yeah, I already edited it and everything and did the graphics, did the color grade and put the royalty fee music and had it cut up and everything. So she'll see it Monday.
Ooh.
So she'll get to see it Monday.
No, I'm gonna be ready because first. I've been watching the masterclass short films. I've been watching the masterclasses like crazy. So
I might put y'all to work because I always can use some PAs now.
Yeah.
See, we all see us in the street.
Yeah.
We still fanboying over all of the same stuff. Trying to figure out how to do what we want to do in this world.
Man. We are normal humans.
Yep. Long as we help one another and share the information,
that's what matters.
Sky's the limit.
Collaboration over competition.
There it is. Mm-hmm.
We're going to end it on that one. I like that. Compete. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, we're going to wrap it up here at the Hilltop Glove Podcast. I just want to let you know my name is DJ and what?
This is Mike.
On the phone it's we have. Maya. There we go. And we're here with our esteemed guest today, Kanate Hendricks.
Hey, thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm humble. I'm blessed that you guys have me. Much love and success to you guys. And I look forward to seeing y'all on the Black Summit one day.
That's what I'm talking about. Well, shoot, we want to sign out today. Just want to let you know, if you have somebody next to you, any family members, et cetera, please tell them that you love them, that you cherish them. And until the next time on the Hilltop Glove Podcast, peace.
Peace, peace.
That's it for today's episode of the Hilltop Glove Podcast.
Make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and other platforms.
Also, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Hilltop Glove.